You speak of God, probed Amenhotep. You have done so several times. Which God do you mean? You are from Zehai and from Amu, so I assume that you mean the ox, whom in the East they call Baal the Lord. Joseph's smile became detached. He even shook his head. My fathers, the God dreamers, said he, made their covenant with another Lord. Then it can only be Adonai, the bridegroom, said the king quickly, for whom the flute wails in the gorges, and who rises again. You see, Pharaoh knows his way about among the gods of all mankind. He must know and try all, and be like a gold washer who dredges the kernel of truth out of much absurdity, that it may help to perfect the teaching of his adored father. Pharaoh finds it hard, but good, very good, a royal task. My good parts have made me work that out. Who has hardship must also have ease, but only he, for it is disgusting to have only ease. Yet to have only hardship is not right either. At the great feast of tribute in the beautiful balcony of audience, my majesty sits next to my lovely consort and the ambassadors of the people. Moors, Libyans, and Asiatics bring a ceaseless train of gifts from all the world. Bar gold and gold in rings, ivory, silver vases, ostrich feathers, oxen, byssus, leopards, and elephants in procession. And just so, the Lord of the Crowns sits in the beauty of his palace and receives in fitting ease the tribute of all the thought of the inhabited earth. For, as my majesty was already pleased to say, the singers and seers of strange gods succeed one another, coming to my court from all the regions of the earth together, from Persia, where the gardens are renowned, and where they believe that some day the earth will be flat and even, and all men have one species, speech, and law, from India, the land where the incense grows, from starwise Babel and the islands of the sea. They all visit me, they pass over before my seat, and my majesty has intercourse with them as he now has with you, who are a special kind of lamb. They offer me the early and the late, the old and the new. Sometimes they leave strange souvenirs and divine signs. Do you see this toy here? And he lifted the round, stringed object from his lap and held it out to Joseph. A lyre, the other assented. It is fitting that Pharaoh holds in his hand the symbol of goodness and charm. This, he said, because the hieroglyph for the Egyptian Nofert, which means both goodness and charm, is a lyre. I see, responded the king, that you have understanding of the arts of Tot and are a scribe. I suppose that belongs to the dignity of the eye, wherein the binding pattern of the depths fulfills itself. But this object is a sign of something else besides goodness and charm, namely, of the artfulness of a strange god, who may be a brother of the ibis-headed or his other self, and who invented the toy as a child when he met a certain creature. Do you know the shell?
It is a tortoise shell, said Joseph.
You are right, assented Amenhotep. This sly-boots of a child god met this wise creature born in the hollow of the rocks, and it fell a sacrifice to his quick wit. For he impudently robbed it of its hollow shell, and put strings across, and fastened on two horns, as you can see, and it became a lyre. I will not say this is the very same toy the mischievous rascal made. The man who brought it and gave it to me, a seafarer from Crete, does not say that. It may only have been made in memory of the first, in jest or piety, for this was only one of various tales the Cretan told of the swaddling babe of the cave. It seems this infant was always getting up out of his hole and swaddlings to play pranks. He stole, it is almost unbelievable, the cattle of the sun god, his elder brother, away from the hill where they pastured when the sun god had gone down. 50 of them he took and drove them about, across and across, to confuse their hoof marks. His own steps he disguised, binding on them enormous sandals woven of branches, so that there were giant footprints that he left behind, and thus none at all.
and that was quite fitting. For he was indeed an infant, and yet a god, and so those vast, vague footprints were quite as they should be. The cattle he drove away and hid them in a cave, a different one from the one where he was born. There are many in those parts. But first he slaughtered 2 cows by the river and roasted them at a huge fire. These he ate, the suckling babe. It was the meal of a giant child, and went with the footprints.
Amenhotep went on, lying back relaxed in his chair. This done, the thievish child slipped back to his parent cave and into his swaddlings. But when the sun god came up again and missed his cattle, he divined, for he was a soothsaying god, and knew that only his newborn brother could have done the deed. Hot with anger, he came to him in his cave. But the little thief, who had heard him coming, cuddled himself into his swaddlings that smelled sweet of his godhead, made himself very small, and counterfeited the slumber of innocence. In his arms he held his invention, the lyre. And, of course, the hypocrite knew how to lie like the truth when the sun god, undeceived by his wiles, taxed him with the theft. "Quite other concerns have I," he lisped, "than this you think. Sweet sleep, and mother's milk, the swaddlings round my shoulders, and warm baths." And then he swore, the seafarer said, a great round oath that he knew nothing of the cattle. "Do I bore you, mamma?" he interrupted himself and turned to the goddess on her throne. "Since I am freed from the cares of the governing of this land," she replied, "I have much time to spare. I can as well while it away listening to stories of strange gods. Yet truly the world seems upside down to me. It is usually the king who lets himself be narrated to, and now your majesty narrates himself." "Why should he not?" responded Amenhotep. "Pharaoh must instruct, and what he has learned he is always urged to teach at once to others. What my mother really objects to," he went on, and stretching 2 fingers towards her, he seemed, as it were, to explain to her own words, "is, no doubt, that Pharaoh delays to relate his dreams to this understanding and inspired lamb, that he may at last hear the truth about them. For that I shall get true interpretation from him, I am almost certain even now, owing to his person and some things he has already said. My majesty is not afraid, for he has promised that he will not prophesy in the manner of the mouth-foaming youth, or horrify me with such tales as that beggars will consume the offerings. But do you not know, and have you not seen the wonderful way the mind has, that a man, when the fulfillment approaches of his most coveted wish, will of his own free will hold off a little from the consummation? Now it is at hand anyhow, he says, and only waits on me. I may just as well put it off a little, for the desire and the wish themselves have grown dear to me, in a way, and it is too bad about them. That is a way human beings have. And Pharaoh, too, who sets great store by being a human being himself." T smiled. "As your beloved majesty does it, we shall call it beautiful. Since this soothsayer may not well ask, I will. Did the naughty suckling's perjury avail? Or what happened next?"
"This," answered Amenhotep, "according to my source. The sun brother brought the thief in bonds before their father, the great god, that he should confess and the god punish him. But here, too, the rascal lied with the utmost guile and spoke piously out of his mouth. 'Highly I honor the sun,' he lisped, 'and the other gods, and you I love, but fear him here. Protect, then, the younger, and help poor little me.' So he misrepresented himself, displaying his baby side, winking the while at his father out of one eye, so that he could only laugh aloud at the arch rogue. He ordered him to show his brother the cattle and deliver back the stolen property, to which the infant agreed. But when the elder brother heard of the 2 slaughtered cows, he was wroth anew. Now, while he threatened and fumed, the little one played on his lyre, this thing here. And his singing went so sweet to the sound of the lyre that the elder brother's scolding died away, and the sun god thought only of getting the instrument for his own.
And his it became, for they made a bargain. The cattle remained to the thief, the liar the brother carried away, and keeps it forever.
He stopped speaking and looked down at the toy in his lap. In right instructive way, after all, said the mother, Pharaoh has put off the fulfillment of his most ardent wish.
Instructive it is, gave back the king, for it shows that child gods are only disguised children. Disguised out of sheer mischief, he came out of his cave whenever he chose, as a gay and gifted youth, skilled in devices, never at a loss for flexible stratagems, a helper to gods and men. What new things did he not invent, in the belief of the people? Writing and reckoning, culture of the olive, and of shrewd persuasive speech, not shrinking from deceit, yet deceiving with great charm. My seafaring man, whose patron he was, esteemed him highly, for he was the god of favorable chance, so the man said, and of smiling inventiveness, shedding blessing and well-being, whether honestly or even a bit dishonestly won, the way life is. A leader and guide through the windings of this world, turning back with lifted staff to smile. Even the dead he guides, the man said, in their kingdom of the moon, and even dreams, for he is lord of sleep, who closes the eyes of man with his staff, a gentle magician with all his slyness.
Pharaoh's gaze fell on Joseph as he stood before him, the pretty and charming head bowed or even bent on one shoulder, looking sideways up at the paintings on the wall with an unforced and absent smile which seemed to say he need not absolutely listen to all this.
"Are the tales of the mischievous god known to you, soothsayer?" asked Amenhotep.
Joseph quickly changed his pose. He had behaved with pointed lack of courtly manners, and now showed that he was aware of it. He even did so in somewhat exaggerated fashion, so that Pharaoh, who always noticed everything, got the impression not only that this startled return to the present moment was assumed, but that it had been put on to create that very impression. He waited, keeping his veiled gray eyes, as wide open as he could make them, directed on Joseph.
"Known, highest lord?" the young man asked.
"Yes and no, if you will permit your servant the double answer."
"You seek often for such permission," said the king, "or rather you simply take it. All your speaking turns on the yes and at the same time on the no. Is that likely to please me? You are the mouth-foaming youth, and you are not, because you are you. The mischievous god is known to you, and he is not, because—"
"Why?
Was he known to you or not?"
"To you, too, Lord of the Crowns, he has always been known. In a way. For did you not call him a distant brother of the ibis-headed, Jehuti, the moon-friendly scribe, or indeed his other self? Was he known to you or not?" "He was familiar. That is more than known, for in it the yes and no cancel each other out, and are one and the same. No, I did not know the child of the cave and master of pranks. My father's oldest servant, the wise Eliezer, was my teacher, he who could say that the earth sprang to meet him on the bridal journey for the saved sacrifice, my father's father. Pardon, all this leads too far afield. Your servant cannot narrate the world to you at this hour. And yet the words of the great mother still ring in his ear. It is the custom in the world for the king not to narrate, but to be narrated to. Of such pranks as these, I might know several to show you, you and the great mistress, that the spirit of the rogue god has always been at home among my people and is familiar to me."
Amenhotep looked across at his mother with a light nod which meant, "Well, what shall we make of him?"
Then he answered Joseph, "The goddess permits you to tell us one or two of them, if you think you can amuse us, before the interpreting." "Our breath cometh from you," said Joseph, with an obeisance. "I use it to divert you."